What peanut gallery you got going over there?
Just the G chats.
Oh, yeah. I know y'all talk about me on those G chats.
Oh,
I,
we you know we talk about you. We open every show that you're not on talking about
oh,
you.
Oh, I know.
Because, you know.
I hear it. For the record, I would never sleep in Lenny's day bed. So just putting that out there. Hello, Craig.
Hi, gang. Do you guys realize how much better you've gotten at this since you've been doing it religiously with discipline and reputation? I mean, I'm making an observation, but I mean, I bet we can go back to the earlier enumerations of this and you just embarrass the shit out of yourselves.
Yes. Yes. Well, all I have to do is look at the,
I've gotten way better at it for sure. You know?
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think so too. Well, welcome to BeerNet Radio. This is your host, Harry Shoemaker, and I'm joined by our director of content, Jen Lutz-Kirk, and we have a special guest today, ladies and gentlemen. We have Craig Purser, Chief Executive Officer of the National Beer Wholesalers Association. And how you doing there, Craig?
I am doing great. I'm telling you, it's springtime in Washington, which means, well, it's Friday. They are trying to finish up government spending, get on their airplanes, and go back for Easter recess. I mean, it used to be that in politics, you'd go home and take a beating from your constituents. Lately, these folks show up in D.C. and they beat each other's brains out. The reason we have meetings in Washington because we got to come here to help sort through the chaos and make sure at the bottom of the pile of shit, sometimes there might be a pony.
Wow. That is.
I did that so people would tune in.
That
they're going to stay now.
Yeah, right. You know, let's talk about the spring legislative conference. You know, what are the big ticket items that we're thinking about this year?
You know,
it's on the Ides of April, I think.
It is the Ides of April. It is April 14 through 17. But the good news is we've been listening to folks and you don't have to come for a 4-day, 3-night meeting. We've got kind of bite sizes in this and we're really excited about the schedule because on the front end of the meeting, we have our Brew Leadership Conference. And Jen, thank you for talking about that. And Jen, Harry, I know you know this, but the watchers and listeners may not. Jen Litz is part of the this leadership group that has been so instrumental in developing the content and the program. This will be our second annual leadership conference. I participated in the conference last year, and I will tell you, it is not just for women. Men can get a lot. They can learn a lot. And we're just really excited about this. So this starts on Sunday night and we'll go through Monday morning. Legislative conference will kick off on Monday afternoon, allowing folks to get in, as their schedule allows. We will have an afternoon of activities. We will have the event at Charlie Palmer with the suppliers. We've got all the CEOs invited and coming, which will be great for the brewers. It'll be a great opportunity to be together with those good folks. We will have a members meeting on Monday afternoon. We will have the event on Monday night. We will have a program on Tuesday morning, and then we'll send everybody loose to lobby. And then we'll have our marquee cheers, beer and food. And this year we're adding music, beer and food and music on Tuesday night. But for those that do come in early, we're doing something we haven't done I don't think we've ever done. We're inviting everybody to NBWA's headquarters office building on Sunday night. And if your schedule allows and you can come in and you're coming for brew or you want to add brew to your dance ticket, it'll be great to reconnect. We've got a number of past NBWA leaders that are coming in early, see where we live and work. We got a new office at the end of last year after 20 years at another location. And we're excited to show that off. And, it's our members' office. It's their place to convene. We got a standing invitation. Anybody that wants to host a meeting at our office or, they're in town for other business, visiting a legislative person or something, we want them to know that mi casa, su casa, they can come and it's their home first.
So they, you know, it's like having a satellite office in D.C. if you need one.
I'm going to keep that in mind. It's like an airline club, man. We got a cubby hole for you to make phone calls. We got a place for you to do your thing.
Your beer fridge.
Yeah, we got several beer fridges. We're on tap. In a can or in a bottle on tap or on a can or a bottle. That was a country music song from somebody.
Really? That must have been before my time.
Hank Snow. Hank Snow.
Oh, okay. I'll look it up on my Spotify.
Post that in the liner notes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jen, what tell us, what have you been working on with this leadership council? This isn't planned, by the way. We didn't plan to talk about, but since we're all here.
Yeah. Let me do some agenda setting. And by the way, that office, I've been to the new office. It is very cool. It's very modern. You guys have a whole bunch of like rock stars. You have a hall of pictures of rock stars drinking beer, right?
Absolutely.
It's really cool.
That's what it's all about, man. Yeah. It's, you know, what do? We bring people together. So why not celebrate that? But it is very cool.
It is cool. Well, and so just for Leadership Forum, which is really exciting to work on. I love working with Kim McKinney. She's great. We get along very well. And, you know, part of being with Brew is just all the women in the industry that already do exist in positions of leadership, a really great group of people, like the industry at large. But what I'm really excited about for this program is we have an industry leaders panel, and it has Sarah Schwab, who is the new AB wholesaler chair. And I'd like to point out that, you know, this is a very high profile year for AB, and who did they choose as their chair in this time of, you know, we'll call it higher viewership, a female, right? And we also have the venerable Sue McCollum, who everybody knows, you know, CEO, former CEO of major brands, still has some distributorships down in Florida. And we have some people that people might not know in the industry, like Amy Jo Martin, who is really cool. Craig, I think you know who she is. She is author. She started the social media campaigns of several high profile NBA stars like Shaq, and she's worked with The Rock and lots of people. But she has an accelerator, and her whole thing is like, why not now make this change that you've been thinking about as a person, as an organization, in this time of like crazy macroeconomic trends and AI and that sort of thing. She's going to give a really cool keynote where she picks several people that a lot of us know that are going to be in attendance, and she works with them beforehand and works on this like why not now moment. So you're going to be seeing changes made in real time within the industry. And so, yeah, you know, again, some agenda setting, some lobby 101, I think, but also stuff for owners as well as people who are advancing in their career. And I'm just really looking forward to it. I don't know if you have anything else to say, Craig, because I know you'll be there.
No, and it's funny because the why not now kind of fell out as a theme. And it's also kind of reflective of the way that the whole legislative conference is going, because, you know, we listen to our members. And I know people sometimes they're like, oh, you survey us too much. And we really only survey them twice a year. But part of what they've told us is, you know, everybody is into economizing their time. And that's why we've kind of moved some things around to try to allow more people to be engaged and, you know, I can't afford to go to a meeting for 3 days. We understand that people have challenges and, you know, whatever it is, we've tried to do that. We've also kind of tried to do that with the issues, and maybe as this is a good segue. You know, one of the things that we're always talking about is how can we reposition what it is that distributors do in the eyes of policymakers? And that's something that's constantly getting to work out. So one of our issues that we're going to be talking about is the whole importance of independent distribution and, you know, how that is essential to balance in the industry. I mean, one of the things that came out of one of the most recent pieces of M&A, which of course was the number one brewer buying the number two brewer just in 2016. It's hard to believe that's what that went down. But part of what the Department of Justice said as they reviewed the beer industry was independent distribution is essential to competition. So kind of under that umbrella, we're going to be talking about some of the things that are important to distributors. But we've also started in the House of Representatives a 21st Amendment caucus. And we're going to be asking members to join that caucus that are, you know, committed to the whole idea of effective regulation. We know that the states play a really important role, and educating federal policymakers on the role that states play is really important. So we're excited about this. Representative Stephanie Bice, who was the first keynote speaker at the legislative at the Brew Leadership Conference last year, has agreed to co-chair this along with Susie Lee, who is a House member from Nevada. So you've got an Oklahoma Republican and a Nevada Democrat that are chairing this, and we're real pleased to see this. So that's the first issue that we're going to ask people to talk about. Second issue that's very front and center, and this is important because, you know, there was a big piece of tax reform in 2017. And, you know, it ended up cutting rates for business. And, you know, corporate America, publicly traded corporations that are organized as C corporations, got a permanent rate reduction all the way down to 21%. And what pass-through companies or S-Corps, which is what most NBWA member companies and craft brewers are organized
and,
as.
And by the way, which is what we are, Jen.
Just
if Congress does nothing, everybody gets a tax increase after 2025. All of that good rate, effective rate reduction vanishes. And so the whole idea is we've got to start talking about that now. And, you know, a lot of business advocates do a great job of talking to Republicans. Part of what's in our secret sauce is we've got a number of good relationships with Democrats. So we can't go in there and say, hey, we need to make the 2017 tax cuts that did not get any Democratic votes back then permanent. We've got to talk about the fundamentals of why it's important to maintain this tax treatment for small businesses, for pass-throughs, for businesses like ours. So that's going to get worked out.
It's to me, it's such a slam dunk because it's Main Street versus Wall Street, basically.
Companies
like ours.
We're going to have to be bold enough to talk about, and that's not running down publicly traded corporations, but it is sure as hell reminding people that as advocates for Main Street, we're paying attention, and we know that they chose back then, and some of this was the fiscal restraints in order to get the tax relief over the line, and the dynamics as it relates to how much this would cost. But it is shameful if we maintain this corporate tax treatment and we give every pass-through business a tax increase just by the expiration of these taxes. So what we may need to do, and Jen, you can help us, we may need to put Harry in on a couple of those lobby visits. Now, there's a couple of people I want to keep away from, but he may be very effective.
You're just saying that now that I'm sober. You would never say this 5 years ago.
That may or may not, you know, we used to say if it's a visit before 2 p.m., we'll take Harry. But anyway, it's all good. Another issue that's kind of front and center to this is obviously understanding the differences between alcohol products. One of the things that we've seen in the last 3 years is kind of a newfound ambition by our partners. And I say partners because lots of times we're working with them, but our friends in the distilled spirits industry. They have been dissatisfied with the tax relief that they got on excise taxes that was made permanent with everybody's in 2020. And they're seeking additional tax differentials. And some of that's in canned cocktails. We talked about that. But, you know, one is a piece of policy that's a bill that's live that's out there that would expand the substitution drawback and allow the biggest of the alcohol manufacturers to effectively cut their excise tax rates on brown spirits in half. And so that's, you know, that's the reason we've got to go up there and talk about the differences between the products. We know our members are diversifying. We know that our suppliers are diversifying. This is not running down the product. This is just maintaining this balance that works so well for so many folks. Obviously,
can I just say something about that?
Sure, can I, please.
You know, I'm a history buff. I know that's a surprise to nobody. Let's never forget the rum cover over. Let's never forget that the rum cover-over continues to exist. The intent of the law is good to support our outlying territories, of course, but in practice, what it's meant is that if you make rum there, you pay almost no federal excise tax. So I think the liquor guys have it pretty well already. I don't know why they're trying to dip three times into this pool, but that's all I have to say about that. But I also want to cut back on the 21st Amendment caucus when you're done laying out.
That's good. That's as good a time as any. I got a couple others, but yeah, talk to me about that. Question.
Yeah. So what the 21st Amendment caucus, I love it. You know, there's nobody out here defending our 21st Amendment rights. And what are the tenets or, you know, what are the parameters of the 21st Amendment caucus? What do they believe?
Kind of first and foremost, it is understanding that there is this role between the states and the federal government that works so well for so many. I mean, think of it, Harry, as an educational tool first. It is, you know, a group of people that understand this whole principle, and it's really important, and it's more important now than it's been, you know, maybe ever, of balance, you know, and it is, you know, advancing that notion. I mean, not to blur lines, but one of the things that I think has affected and been helpful in policymakers understanding some of the ramifications and implication of different policy proposals. A group that's brought a bunch of people together has been the Center for Alcohol Policy. And that, hard to believe, that was a group that was founded about 16 years ago, 17 years ago, around that whole principle. This is unrelated to that, but it's a similar kind of objective to bring federal policymakers together, you know, because part of what the center was doing was in a lot of ways bringing state policymakers together to understand the role that they play. This is taking, this is doing something that provides a tool, it provides a way forward for all of these people to understand better what's going on out there. You know, we when you look at some of the ambitions that we've seen in recent years, I'll pick on one just because it's been in the news lately. It's been, you know, one of the world's biggest beverage and foods companies' entrance into alcohol distribution. And, you know, it was a big 3-year debate and discussion. There's been lots of commentary and ink generated around this. But, you know, obviously we were pleased to see Pepsi announce at the end of last month that they were exiting their ownership of Blue Cloud as a distributor. We saw that as a positive development and look forward to welcoming them back into the industry in a more traditional role. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm envisioning the 21st Amendment caucus, not necessarily addressing that from a policy standpoint, but that's the kind of thing that we need to educate a portion of Congress around the principles that we're advocating for. If that makes sense.
Right. And the, you know, there seems to be kind of a general trend on everything toward federalization, but this is a kind of a states' rights issue, and that alcohol is a cultural, there are big differences around the country, and people need to have that home option of deciding what they want to, how they want to regulate it. And I think, you know, if we're going there, I think the cannabis people should be listening and maybe thinking about structuring their system in the same way, because it's already developed that way anyway, because the states are doing what they want because it's not federally legal. But when it does someday become a federal legal, they're probably going to have to force to do a similar type of state, leave it to the states type deal.
Well, and this week we saw 21 attorneys general weigh in asking Congress to provide more guidance on Delta 9 products. And that is absolutely right in our wheelhouse. And there has been a lack of federal clarity without question, you know, for a product that might be legal in the eyes of the Farm Bill. But, you know, we're watching states, you know, go one step up and two steps back, depending on what's going on. We're watching marketplaces like Minnesota be developed. But one of the things Minnesota has done is they put a lot of work in to developing the regulatory framework that I think provides a little bit more appropriate guidance about what you can do inside of that marketplace. Right. Now, is that reflective and is that similar to the way that we regulate alcohol? Yes. But a lot of both the weed or the bigger picture legal hemp and CBD/THC advocates, hemp advocates, a lot of what they've advocated for, I think, has been very thin gruel, in as much as they've said regulate weed like alcohol. And that's not what they mean. They're not advancing those principles. They're not recognizing, you know, and some people say, oh, you know, you're just for a 3-tier system for weed. Well, I think that the part of the principles of alcohol regulation is a separation of the tiers. So let's take a look at that and see what that looks like in working to advance a marketplace and that has some parameters and some regulation to it. And, you know, this is my opinion, if you're serious about this, you've got to do something about eradicating the black market. You can't just turn a blind eye. If you're going to have a legal lane, you can't just turn a blind eye on the illegal lane. It never worked that way for alcohol. You know, every single year, the Virginia ABC goes out there in Western Virginia and they bust up a still to show you that they still can, because it's still being done. But we don't have, you know, in my home state, we don't have illegal hooch going up and down the streets all over the communities in Virginia.
Right.
I have a question and a comment. So first the question. Craig, when are you, can you see yourself getting louder to your own membership about the whole cannabis, you know, infrastructure? And when I say cannabis, I mean D9 as well, in the next few years, or is it too much of a minefield at the moment, given the lack of clarity and the fact that a lot of your members, you know, have some tangential relation to those products?
Yeah, no, I think we're communicating more about that. Mm-hmm. I think we're being careful in how we're doing it. There remains a level of risk, and mm-hmm. you know, we're constantly going to talk about that. You know, I do not think I don't think we're not going to get guidance from alcohol regulators about a product that's next door or down the street. Certainly not right now, and certainly without. You know, instruction from Congress. You know, let's be clear, you know, the FDA, when they were looking at the whole notion of CBD, and, you know, we've watched CBD and hemp kind of evolve from being, you know, a sleep aid, air quotes, or a supplement or something that, you know, Harry, I think you and I both have called it snake oil before, but we've watched Delta 9 be developed to being an intoxicant. And, yeah. you know, if we were having this conversation 30 months ago, it was a totally different deal, CBD versus CBD.
Right. It's kind of a free for all. And, you know, Minnesota at least has a handle on what's being sold. But you go to other states and it's being sold without age restrictions, just in C-stores in some places.
Because even here, too.
Yeah.
Even in Texas, of all places.
Right. In Texas. And so, I'm not even sure people know the regulators.
Yeah. Gas station CBD can be very problematic. You know, it can create problems for people, for consumers. You don't know what's there. You know, certainly, you know, when you look at how some of these products are being marketed, and I'm not talking about beverage, I'm talking about edibles, but it's a knockoff on a candy brand. Can you imagine the alcohol industry going to market with an alcohol product that was a knockoff of a candy brand? I mean, you know, that's an anathema to us. And so, you know, I'm you smile because you're thinking of some edgy products, and we've all seen some of those.
Yes.
But, you ever heard of Hard Mountain Dew?
Yeah, gummies.
A lot of people have asked a lot of questions about that.
Kind of a plug for a three-tier system is provenance. I mean, you kind of touched on that, but you got to know, there's got to be some way you can go to. If the product is problematic, you have to have leverage. The state has to have leverage to pull a license, know who sold it, exactly who sold it. And, you know, you got to have a choke point within the state. And that choke point usually is distribution. So,
yeah,
I'm not saying anything nobody already knows, but.
No, but it's, you know, it is clear as mud. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, that's a challenge. But I do think there are ways that risk can be mitigated. And certainly, Jen, that's going to be something we're going to be talking about. You know, we have an obligation to help our members navigate these issues. I have not been instructed to do the weed industry's work. And that's the other thing that I think I'm always sensitive to is, you know, we are the national beer wholesalers. And obviously, beer and beverage is expanded. But that's not national beer and weed. You know, somebody said years ago, you know, you why don't you take the wholesaler out and put in distributors? And then somebody else said, hey, if we do that, we always thought the W could be wholesaler or it could be weed. So
future looking.
Well, let's get back to beer and alcohol. You know, you mentioned Pepsi's Blue Cloud, you know, and I think there's financial reasons why they got out, but really, the reason I think they got out is because they went up against the granite wall that is U.S. beer distributors, and they lost. Mm-hmm. it's a testament really to the cohesiveness of beer distributors. And it's kind of a warning to others to want to tackle it and disrupt. Is that how you see it?
I maybe see it a little bit differently because I saw so many different voices weighing in on this issue. And, you know, I appreciate the props, and I mean, that's what we do, but I'm always careful to how our work is described because, you know, I don't think we were opposing the product per se. We were pretty clear in our concerns about the way they chose to enter the marketplace. And, you know, that's I don't think that's to be debated, but, you know, we saw consumers weigh in. We saw public health weigh in. We saw state regulators ask questions. We saw federal legislators ask questions. We saw state associations raise questions. We saw a cross section of voices that said, hey, maybe this is not the way that we need to go. We saw questions being asked about competition. We saw questions being asked about trade practices. We saw a whole variety of, like I said, of voices that were saying, hey, what about this? And so, you know, I the way I described it to somebody early on as they were deciding to exit the business, I said, this is because of a lot of different interested parties work together. And yeah. I really believe that.
Well, I mean, if Coke was ever thinking about doing it, I think they've been warned off. Not that they were, but, you know.
But the interesting thing is, I mean, let's unpack that for a minute. That was, they also made news this past month by announcing that they've sold $1 billion worth of alcohol products.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's a contrast as it relates to the way that they've chosen to go to market. And that is with experienced alcohol manufacturing partners and with experienced alcohol distribution partners. And so that's, you know, that's the way they're playing it. And, you know, we take them at their word as they announced, you know, entrance of the market, the Red Tree formation. You know, I think they've been out and about in the circuit. They've been at your meetings. You know, they've been at our meetings being pretty clear about what their objective is. And so we're going to encourage them to stay the course and stick to the lanes that they've identified, which we think work pretty damn well, and allowing a lot of new products to get established. I mean, when you look at, and granted markets ebb and flow, but, you know, I'm proud of the success of the number of manufacturers that have been able to enter the alcohol industry, the beer space specifically. And that's not in spite of a three-tier system. That's not in spite of state laws. That's not in spite of the 21st Amendment. I think in a lot of ways, you can peel it back, and it's because of that.
I mean, Simply, I just went to a C-store this morning. There's a huge display of Simply right up front. It's just some of those brands have worked, and some haven't in year two. Did you see Mark Brown this morning? You know, you and I have been through this kind of in the late 90s, and we're going through it, it seems like, again. And I'm talking about neo-prohibitionism, if you want to call it that, or just kind of a general feeling that there's that quote keeps coming up, no safe level of alcohol consumption. Is that a part of any, you know, like policy or talking points that that you're thinking of?
So we are going to talk about the dietary guidelines. This is a process that occurs every 5 years. It's an all of government review of all things related to Americans' diet. It's where we got the food pyramid, you know, and that evolves even as it relates to how many servings of this or that you should look at. And for a number of years, at least 40, the USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, and the Health and Human Services Department have shared the responsibility of looking at alcohol consumption. And, you know, make no mistake about it, there are a number of interests that are very organized that are working to advance and influence the process, you know, with their kind of stated objectives. And that includes a whole host of things as it relates to alcohol's use, its misuse, the chronic and the acute, all of those things that we're familiar with. So this is familiar in some ways, but it is certainly something that we're concerned about. I think we are wanting to ensure that the process is transparent, and we want to ensure that the science is followed. And that is, you know, that's kind of where we are in this right now. We're, you know, there are a number of folks that are well-intentioned, but it cannot be ignored that we're watching an advancement from the WHO, for instance, is I think the clip you're talking about, you know, is advancing this notion of no safe level. And I think that that runs counter and contrary to 40 years of research. And the 40 years of research has pointed out that alcohol in moderation can be part of a healthy lifestyle. That's not me saying something. I'm not wearing a lab coat. You know, I got a BA and BS from a state university. So, you know,
right behind you, buddy.
But what I've watched is, you know, an encroachment of, you know, kind of alternative facts, to turn a phrase. And, you know, I think we want to be respectful of the process, and we want to let folks do their thing. But, you know, this is an issue. And this is something that I think we're very dialed into. This is something where the partners in the industry are very much coordinating and working together, you know, and we want to be very, you know, very smart in how we proceed.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody? Go ahead, Jen.
Well, no, I'm just curious because, you know, we both saw you were on a panel at our summit with the other heads of the BevAlc trade organizations. And this is one thing, to your point, that you are very aligned on. And this is a top priority. Is there any thought to, like, you know, doing an offensive and defensive campaign about actually alcohol is good, like, you know, well, jobs and, you know, in moderation and your blue zones, right? Some of the people around the world who live longer than anyone else, a lot of them drink wine, beer.
Yeah. And that's, and if you're not familiar about what Jen's talking about, you're talking about the Netflix documentary. Have you seen that? That talks about, it's fascinating. If you guys haven't, if the listeners and watchers haven't tuned into that, goes into longevity, goes into quality of life, goes into satisfaction, goes into happiness. All of these are things that I think we ignore a lot that need to be part of the conversation. So yeah, there's conversations around those kinds of things that are going on because that's part of our job. That's what we're supposed to do. So yes, but I think we're wanting to be respectful of the process, and we're also wanting to be, you know, there's a lot of science that is on our side, and there is a lot.
What is the Netflix? I haven't seen this. What's it called?
Is it called Blue Zones? It's about people
that's in the title. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll check it out. I can't believe I'm behind on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not in your algorithm.
It's obviously not.
But
so you kind of alluded to this earlier, but what's lobbying on the Hill like this year versus 5 years ago versus 10 years ago?
Well, you know, it's interesting because most recently, you know, we had a disruption to leadership, and that's, you know, and I talked about that kind of at our end of the year time together. And that certainly, you know, has created an interesting dynamic. I think the reality of it is, there's still a lot of good things that are happening behind the scenes. You know, I won't name names or compromise people, but, you know, I continue to see, you know, good displays from members of Congress, left, right, and center, about each other. You know, the media has drawn such a stark battle lines, and, you know, we talked about this before, but, you know, if you click onto the Fox News and on a morning show, you're getting one set of facts and news, mm-hmm. and you click over on MSNBC and you're getting something totally different. And then if you go to CNN, you know, sometimes you're getting a little bit of each's, you know, both sides talking points. Not that they're always in the middle, but my point is, there is such a narrative that's written, and, you know, and as an advocate, yes, sometimes it's different and sometimes it's more difficult. But the blocking and tackling the fundamentals are still the same. And that's why, you know, things like the legislative conference are so important. You know, Harry, I remember Tom Cardella, who a lot of folks will recall, who was a longtime industry vet. He was a Miller legacy guy. He was at the old InBev. He was, you know, at Miller Coors, and just a heart of gold and one of the great, I think, leaders of the industry. And he said it at a meeting almost 20 years ago. He's like, you got to do lunch or you're going to be lunch. And it was hardcore because he was talking about some of the ambitions that his company had at the time. And it maybe rubbed people the wrong way. But I'm telling you, I think that's why distributors have to come to Washington, because that relationship where you're going to that member of Congress's place of business to advocate for your company and your family and your community, it's never been more important. That's how we help get back to a more normal set of facts. I had lunch this week with a former U.S. senator who left in 22, did not run for re-election. And he said, Craig, as I was leaving, and he'd been in the Senate for about three terms, he said, I did a look back at how many, this was a Republican, how many Democrats I worked with and passed legislation. And he said, in my career, it was 46. And I'm like, you know, there's only 100 people in the Senate. And yeah, there's some turnover. But I'm like, you passed legislation for the people from your state with 46 members of the former of the opposing party. I said, you got to shout that from the mountaintop. You've got to remind everybody that you're talking to that is still in the Senate of that kind of fact. And to me, it gave me hope, because it reminded me of he's just been out for 18 months. You know, so it's not that far gone. And I do think we can get off this kind of funky high center that we are on. I do think that with experience comes, you know, comes skill. And I do think that the speaker, you know, is, you know, we did avert another government shutdown. I mean, barring breaking news, you know, they're doing the fundamentals that have to be done. That's good. And, you know, we're going to have new leadership by the Republicans in the Senate. Senator McConnell, who's held on to that position longer than anybody else, is going to be leaving. And so there's going to be a new leader, and that will be interesting to watch. That'll be important for the Republicans. Senator Schumer, you know, continues to lead the Democrats. You know, we're going to have, I think a lot of experts think that the Senate may flip at this election. There's a lot of people that think that the House may flip likewise. I'm not certain on that. And certainly the presidential election's a jump ball. I think everybody in Washington is working on a plan A and a plan B, and it doesn't matter which one's A or B. It just could be very, very different. So the importance of beer distributor constituents going and spending time with their members of the House and the members of the Senate has never been important. Let me quick name check a couple of people that we're going to be hearing from. And I've got an eye on the clock as well. But we just found out that House Republican Whip Tom Emmer is going to be joining us. And Tom is the number three Republican and is just one of those people. He is Minnesota nice, but he is a really good legislator and very, very thoughtful. He actually was part of the sweepstakes and the speaker's race and ended up remaining in his number three position as whip. But just a great, great guy. We're going to hear from the Democratic Caucus Chair, who is the number three guy for the Democrats, Pete Aguilar. Pete is from California, and he is one of those next generation of Democrats that understands that business needs to play a role. He listens well. He kind of brings that perspective to their leadership. You know, we have not seen Hakeem Jeffries as the new Democratic leader in the speaker's position. That'll be interesting to see if that comes to pass. But Pete has agreed to join us. The Next Gen Group is going to have two pieces of breakout. First, on Monday night, they're going to have a reception at a place called Hamilton's, which is right around from Charlie Palmer, where the reception will be on Monday night. But at their lunch on Tuesday, they're going to hear from Budget Committee Chairman Jody Arrington. And Jody's been very involved in all of these and in the preparation of the budget and all of this work to keep the government open as a member of leadership and chair of that committee. Also, the Brew Group, Erin Houchin, is a House member from Indiana. She is a great emerging leader. She is a former business owner, and she is going to be speaking at the Brew Leadership Conference. And then we're going to hear for the chairman's circle, for the PAC donors, we're going to hear from the chairman of the Republican Campaign Committee, Richard Hudson from North Carolina. I mean, a great lineup of congressional speakers, I think representative of the future of what Congress is going to look like. And so we're very pleased with the content and the number of folks that are going to be here, and just hope folks will get out here. Our registration is strong, but we're looking forward to a great conference.
Are you going to be hard on those congressmen, Craig? Are you going to throw them softballs?
Well, you know, it look, I think part of this is you got to ask them questions that are real, you know, that are real. And it kind of depends on what's going on. I mean, some of them are going to give us their shtick and some of them are going to engage in a conversation, and that's okay.
Legislative conference to me is just one of the greatest, not only because walking the hill is so important. It was the first out of state trip I took when I got in the beer industry. I'm sorry, I'm getting a bad signal. I don't know what's going
That's
on here.
Fantastic. I love that.
Well, anyway, you can still hear me, but it's just a great meeting. It's a great opportunity to see the C-level people in the industry in a tight little group, you know?
Yeah. We've been with this new office, we've been doing a lot of hosting and get a lot of folks out here. We had a group of emerging leaders in for a group that were a part of the State Government Affairs Council. And we had a speaker that was a chief of staff on the Hill. This was just 2 nights ago. And he was talking about the importance of legislative staff, because today's legislative assistant is tomorrow's chief of staff. And that is, you know, we just watch that left and right. And the whole novelty and the whole uniqueness of being able to be a business owner or operator and, you know, connect with these lots of times overworked and underpaid staff people really has value. And when you've got something that you need, big, little, or whatever, just having that connection of somebody in DC, you know, obviously we can help a lot of people do a lot of things, but we can help them because of you. That's for sure.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, thank you so much for being on. I appreciate it, Craig. I hope you have a good weekend, and we look forward to seeing you in 3 weeks in DC. Okay.
Absolutely. Cheers, you guys. Thanks a bunch.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
Bye.